Darren Carter for the Premiership. That it should be a true blue born and bred who took them there.
I thought he showed tremendous nerve coming up to take that, and he struck it beautifully.
Elation after, just, do you remember much of it, or was it just a bit of a blur?
It was a bit of a blur, in all fairness. I remember as soon as the ball hit the net, it was pandemonium, wasn't it? Obviously, fans were on the pitch, and there was lads that played Sunday League football with literally on the pitch at Cardiff. I'm like, what's going on here? It's mental, and by the time they cleared the pitch, it's just, you could just see the emotion of everyone. Everyone was just, you know, I remember sort of being really pleased with like your Jonos and your Benos and Grange and those guys who had been through it. And I was just trying to look for my family, look for my dad, like, and it was, yeah, it was mental. I was having like a pint. I'm just, this is crazy. And he's saying, I want you to come to West Brom, blah, 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 and went through everything about me as a player. And that was big, just coming from Brian and someone I've looked up to and one of my heroes. And he was kind of like, you know, he sold that I'd be a senior player. I think that was the big key for me. And I never was going to be that hero blues. The opening day at Highbury against Arsenal was just surreal a little bit. It's the team they had then. Vieira was Omri, Bergkamp. The team was, especially for me as a midfielder, I came on in that game, I think again around the hour mark, something like that, and just running on and having Big Patrick Vieira stood there, and you got Thierry Omri and Viltord and people like that. You're like,
I remember they were all massive, weren't they?
Oh, just huge.
Welcome to B2B Birmingham Podcast Series 2. Our guest today is Darren Carter. Right, Darren?
Yes.
Yeah, Darren Carter. firstly, how are you today?
Yes, all good. Yeah, can't complain. I'm in the process of training for the marathon, London Marathon. So I had to do about 16 miles yesterday, which wasn't fun. But apart from that, I'm all good.
Why? Yeah. So this the podcast, just to reiterate and just to tell you again, it's just a Birmingham-based podcast championing people from Birmingham. Obviously, on the blue side of Birmingham, you are a national treasure. Can you just introduce yourself really to people that might not know a lot about you?
Yeah, played professionally for nearly 20 years. Started here at Blues, came through the ranks here as a young player and through the academy. Made my first team debut here and then went on to play for a host of clubs. Was very fortunate to have a career that sort of spanned nearly 20 years. And since sort of hanging my boots up 3.5 years ago, went straight to coaching. Coached at West Brom, here at Blues. At the moment, out of the coaching game, but I've always done media work alongside playing. So I've been fortunate enough to watch a lot of the Blues games this year with commentary for Blues TV and BBC WM. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Fully fledged coach / pundit at the moment. What was a really enjoyable playing career.
It's like you say there, 300 appearances in the Premier League and Football League. Where did it begin? Obviously, you were here from a young age, but where did the football journey begin for you initially?
My dad is from Small Leith. All my family are big blue noses, so he brought me down here. 1988 was my first game. His crew at home stood literally just behind us here in the cop and where the refreshments was. So I was literally, my dad put me on the ledge there, so right at the back here of the cop. And that's where my love of football started, really following the Blues. And my dad used to play over Saturday and Sunday as well, sort of middle income level, and was a decent player. Also left footed, so I inherited my left foot from him. And that's where, like I said, my love of the game came from. Just couldn't get enough of going and watching and playing. Ended up playing for a Sunday League team, Arden Forest, based in Solihull. And from there, played for them for probably 5 or 6 years. And back then, you'd have scouts come to the game and they'd find your mum and dad. And asked them if you'd want to come along for a trial. So I had Blues at the time. I had Wolves and Villa. As I say that, but yeah. So it was only then till I was about 14 when it was time to sign schoolboy forms that he started to get serious and think, right, I'm going to sign for a club here. And I ended up signing here at Blues. And that's where my sort of, academy professional journey started. But from young, it was, my dad was a huge influence.
When did they come in for you, the scouts? Because obviously now it's ridiculous, isn't it? Oh, 7 and 8 year olds are getting snapped up. Yeah. And so it's a little bit different back in our day to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's crazy, really. I think probably when I was about 11 or 12, when there was first real interest. And again, like you said, they'd find out who your mum and dad were standing on the line and sort of like cozy up to them and ask kind of, what I'm doing and would have come in for training. So, as I say, Blues were one of the first. And obviously, I was a Blues supporter. So that was a no-brainer. And I went in and trained with them. But it was around the time then that Barry Fry was manager. And those who remember, he actually scrapped the youth system. So that left me then for probably about a year where I was playing for my Sunday club, Ardwick Forest. I was playing for my district as well, Solihull, on a Saturday. And sort of in the week then I'd go and train. I ended up training the Wolves for nearly a year. This was leading up to when, just before I was 14, before I signed schoolboy forms. But as fate would have it, Blues then reinstated the youth system literally right at the end of that season where I was ready to sign schoolboy forms. The Wolves were being pretty slow coming back in their responses and got the offer to come and sign schoolboy forms with Blues. So I think it was about 10 days, 2 weeks after the academy director of Wolves phoned me and said, "We want you to sign." I was like, "I've already signed the Blues." So and I actually seen him a couple of years ago and he always says, "You're the one to go away and we should have been quicker." And just goes to show you things can, it's timing of things. And had it been a little bit earlier, I wouldn't have had any choice, as I say, because Blues had scrapped the youth system. So your business meant it was made. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what was the journey from youth then to first team?
He was pretty rapid, really. Them first 2 years as a schoolboy, I remember, so obviously I was still at school. I'd come in and train in the week and then play on a Sunday. But Brian Eastick was the academy manager at the time. And Brian was incredible because he kept pushing me. When I was 15, he had me in the squad where he actually started me in a youth cup game. So I hadn't played he was under 17s, under 19s level at that time. And then he had the reserve team. Hadn't even played under 17s and he pushed me straight into this youth cup game here. I think we played Wickham here at St Andrews, and the first time playing at St Andrews, I was like, "This is incredible."
Wow.
But he kept pushing me then. So when I should have been under 17s, he pushed me to the under 19s and then pushed me to the reserves. So Brian was incredible, really. He just kept pushing me all the way through it. I just found a bit of momentum, I think, just found confidence, especially in my first year. So when I hit 16, signed scholarship forms when I left school. And that first year, being at Wasp Hills, being around the first team and all the and all of that, was incredible. And I sort of played in the reserves a lot. So then Trevor Francis was manager at the time. He kind of had come to the games, started to know who I was, seen me at the training ground. And that was just the whole thing, because obviously my dad's...
I was going to say, I bet your dad was absolutely...
My dad's hero is Trevor, as most Bruce fans' generation is. So that was kind of incredible. And then that second year, when I hit my second year, so just turning 17, that's when it all sort of kicked off. And Trevor had me in a few squads in pre-season, played in a couple of pre-season games, and then had me in some squads for the first half of that season. And then Trevor obviously left just towards Christmas time. And that's when Steve Bruce came in. And that's when it literally went from, right, you're not a reserve team player, now you're first team. And gave me my debut pretty much straight away at West Brom in January. So, yeah, I look at that period from when I left school, 16, my first year as a scholar, heading into my second year was just crazy how, I was just pushed into the first team. Or just pushed, like I say, always a sort of couple of years ahead of myself.
But that prepared me, I think, to go into the first team when Brucey came in.
Was there any point during that time where you just accelerated that you were like, when it's, this might be above my level, or did you always feel comfortable?
I always felt comfortable, just because I think I had so much energy at that stage and so much confidence. And because I'd been used to being pushed up a year or two, I just felt like, right, just go in and give it everything. And it was working, you know, I was seeing obviously rewards from it. So my confidence level was just sky high. And I was literally a box to box midfielder, like priding myself on having, you know, the more energy than anybody. And, you know, I'd outrun anybody. I had that mentality, you know, I'd get forward, I'd score goals. I'd love doing that. I loved getting back in defending. So yeah, it was just a combination. I think just momentum and confidence. I never really thought about it too much. Just went and played.
You seem to have a few good players, so you were good lads around at that time as well. Did you feel that was encouraging when you were in, getting into the first team and breaking in?
Oh, 100%.
Like the lads who you played with.
100%. And I always say I was very fortunate, and I still see a lot of them now. But I mean, you know, I'd been a fan and a season ticket holder, so I'd seen like Urien Bennett, Martin Granger, Michael Johnson, Darren Purse, Martin O'Connor, you know, Brian Hughes, all these guys. I'd been with them on this journey, albeit as a fan.
Yeah.
But I'd seen the heartache of the playoffs. I'd seen the heartache of the Worthington Cup. I'd seen, you know,
especially... Still too soon, that Worthington. Still too soon.
I know, apologies. But that was the thing, like you say, it's more like Benno and Jono had been here for flipping decade. Do you know what I mean? So it was a little bit surreal at first going in to that and seeing them and thinking, watched you guys for years, but them guys were top draw. Absolutely looked after me from day one. And I always say it's really, really fortunate the group of players I had and the squad I went into. You know, they were hard-nosed, like training, they would give you.
If you, I was going to say, O'Connor, ever leave one on you just to welcome you.
Away, or you didn't show, you know, you weren't on it every single day, they would be on you. I used to chuckle. I chuckle now because I think sometimes in sessions I'd be doing like a possession drill and I'd be keeping the ball and I think I'm flying here, first one to give away, bang, they'd be on me, like Tommy Mooney would be on me, or you know, Stipp would be on me, Miley O'Connor, and I'd be like, that's the first one they give away. But it was just demands, and I learned the game through them guys and the physicality, like what it was to stand up and, you know, be in the men's game, because yeah, they gave me an incredible grounding. So I always thank them guys. I was lucky.
So yeah, like you say, your debut was against West Brom, wasn't it?
Yep.
Your first goal against Crewe.
Yes.
Which helped secure the playoff spot.
Yeah.
What do you remember of that?
So that was the rearranged game. Because if you remember, we played Crewe. That would have been my home debut, actually. The first game against Crewe here was St Andrews, and it was abandoned after 60 minutes. I remember going in at half time and it was lashing down and the means was getting a bit. And we come out second half and it was like, this is unplayable. And the ref called it off. So actually my home debut was that game. So when they obviously rearranged it, that's when I scored my first goal and with my right foot. That's probably the main thing I remember. But again, it was just a carbon copy of the goals I'd just scored all through my youth career, arriving late into the box. And just naturally, just instinctively hitting the ball, it'll be on my right foot. So that was quite nice that my first goal in senior football was with my right foot, and here at St Andrews as well, which was nice. Mm. So, and he's that in the railway end as well. And my family were just up in the main stand that side, so he kind of all played into quite nicely.
You didn't score anything, your right foot, left foot as well. Did you always find from the day you could kick a ball? All you ever heard was, he's only got a left foot, keep him on his left.
Yes, like I say, my dad always, and everybody knows him, says he had a wonderful left foot, and he still tells me to this day, it was better than mine. But yeah, it's always a shout, isn't it, when you're a lefty. Okay, might try. But to be fair, I always felt strong on my right foot. And as my career went on, I scored quite a few goals on my right foot. So quite proud of that.
No one ever shouts, keep him on his right foot, though, do they?
It's just something about us lefties, isn't it? So I don't know, they just fear us a little bit more, I think.
So let's fast forward to the penalty.
Mm.
to secure the top flight since 1985, I think it was. I think we've heard on the commentary.
It was 1985, wasn't it?
So take us through the game, the preparation, getting there, and what do you remember?
Yeah, the preparation was incredible, I think. And having someone like Steve Bruce, who had been obviously used to big games and big occasions throughout his career, and especially at United. So he knew how to keep us sort of away from any kind of, you know, anything that's going on around us, the hype around the game and stuff. So even the playoff games against Millwall, he just had a super ready. We'd practice penalties and we'd be here at St Andrews. So we'd be stood on the centre circle. He'd do the walk, he'd do the whole routine. And we'd done that every day after training. So, yeah, by the time it rolled round to Cardiff, to the plaque final, you know, we'd all practiced that penalties. And you're going up against Ian Bennett and Nico Vassan, who get to know who where you want to go. So they got to know that, you know, I loved going from a left, whipping it that side. So I had to be even better with my technique because they knew where I was going. So you're practicing against them guys. So I always say that was a good thing. The whole prepping, we went down to Cardiff. And, you know, yeah, as I say, Bruce, you're doing a great job of keeping us sort of guarded and sheltered. And it was just a really good sort of calm prep. And I think it helped as well. A lot of the guys had played the year before in the World Cup final. So they'd known kind of what was going on and everything around the game, like that magnitude. So I think they were a lot calmer, that, you know, and having been through that experience the year before. So, yeah, leading into the game, I was really confident. I thought
they were slight favourites, if I remember, weren't they?
They were, yeah. I mean, Norwich had, obviously, we'd got into the playoffs, you know, quite late, haven't we? And our momentum had took us in there late in the season. But Norwich were the ones who were knocking the door for automatic. And they had a really good squad, really good squad. So, yeah, we went in probably a slight underdogs. And given our record, probably in the playoffs for the 4 or 5 years previous, I think everyone thought we just had this curse over us, we weren't going to go over the hump. So, leaning into the day, I just remember leaving the hotel and when you got close to the ground, it was just a sea of blue. It was just seemed like there was Blues fans everywhere. And I think, again, because I was one of those the year before Worthington Cup who got there late because of the traffic.
Oh, yeah.
So I think
we just walked in, the first thing we seen was Fowler score.
Yeah,
we
were So I think a lot of Blues fans had said, right, we're getting there super early. And it did feel like it was just a sea of blue. And that's when it hits you, though, this is a big, big game. And yeah, literally going into the stadium, the roof was on. So it was just a drone of noise from the warm-up and stuff. So it was just leading into the game.
Nervous?
I was never nervous. I think the most nervous I was the hotel just before we left when he named the team, because I knew I wouldn't start because he kept me on the bench for the second leg against Millwall and kind of said to me, I want to protect you. It's a big game. It's a rough atmosphere and everything else. And I thought, is he going to do that again for the final? But, you know, not have me involved, because you had people like Danny Sonner and Curtis Woodhouse, experienced blokes who were there. And when he named the squad, he named the 11, I was like, yeah, pretty much I know what the 11 was going to be. And I'm like, please be on the bench. And that's the most nervous I was all day. And then when he said my name, I was like, and it was almost from that point, I can go and enjoy it now, because I'm a part of it. I can go contribute to the game.
How does he name the squad? Fake block in a room and
just literally, like, yeah, turns the got the pad, literally, like the notepad, literally rolls it over. And
so that moment,
yeah, see, yeah, you're yeah, like, you should lad, on there, literally. So, from that point, I was super calm, just, you know, really glad just to be involved and be there. And, like I say, when I first got out to the pitch before the warm-up, and like, you're looking mad, and I'm looking at where I sat the year before at Worthington Cup, and I'm like, I'm down here now. Do you know what I mean? And that was the most surreal thing all that season, from when I made my debut, was realising, I'm on the pitch now, I can affect things, I'm not in the crowd, do you know what I mean? That was a nice moment. And then the game, it wasn't a classic, I don't think.
No.
Yeah, from any stretch of the imagination.
Tentative.
It was. I think both teams were kind of like...
So no lose, isn't it?
Yeah. And we had probably the best chances in the game. Stern had a great chance, I remember. Hughes, he had a chance. And obviously, you know, you get to... So I came off of Steve Vickers after an hour.
And even that last half an hour, he wasn't much in the game. So when he went to extra time, you're like, you know, this is really in the balance.
And they scored.
They scored. Yeah, they scored. And Grange had kind of missed one. And that was a big thing because you could see Grange, his whole demeanor then was like, flipping, I've been through all this heartache. He'd been there and done it all, you know, for them years. But then when Jeff Horsfield scored, it was about 7 minutes later.
Yeah.
It was almost like in that moment, I was like, we're going to win. Genuinely felt like this emotional level, we're going to win this. Because you could see, and you just sensed it with them as well. They were like,
yeah.
Now they've come back into the game. And
well, even when that goal goes in, you can see that they're just.
It was important to hit them so soon after that scored, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. And the way it went in, he didn't, like, it wasn't like he burst the net. He kind of like sort of bounced in because of the Blues fans at the other end. It was kind of like he's in, and then there was a delayed reaction. And so, yeah, from that point on, I was super confident. And I remember even a half time then of extra time, I'm going right to that. Oh, we're going to win this. We're going to win this. So after the thing, you probably have your more senior players going. Oh, God,
yeah. I was going to say that.
But
you are playing with players that have been through penalty losses, aren't you? And what is it like? You're looking around, and how does the psychology change for them?
We had some great chances. I think Jono hit the post late on in extra time, and you could feel like that was like the team were pushing, like they didn't want penalties. I think a lot of them were like, we need to finish it now.
Yeah.
So then when he goes to pens, yeah, I just remember. He was very calm. I think, yeah, there was nerves. You can sense from a few of them that have been there and done it, thinking, no, not again. Surely we've got to the final this time. We've got to get over the line. But he was quite funny because I knew from all our practice where everybody was going to go, like penalties. And then when I knew kind of the lineup of penalty takers, I was pretty confident. The only one I was nervous about was Dev because I knew how much Dev meant to him,
yeah.
You know, as a blue nose, and do you know what I mean? And I was like, Stern, I knew would score, I knew Stan would score, I knew Hughesy would.
Dev had just re-signed as well, hadn't he?
Yeah, and I didn't know with Dev because with his penalties, he would vary up sometimes, I think, in training. But I knew he'd probably blast it, and then you're like, you know, just hope he flies in.
Yeah, you see, after he takes the penalty, you see it's emotion on his face, just like
100%. Mm. He was the only one I was nervous about. So when Dev scores, they'd missed one by there, I think. Like I say, the way the penalties went, it was.
It's how far over 35s, a couple of games, and he took a pen in like a penalty shootout. And I was like, how does that compare? And he was just like, shut up, man.
Very different.
Yeah.
Very different. Yeah.
Elation after just. Do you remember much of it, or was it just a bit of a blur?
It was a bit of a blur, in all fairness. I remember as soon as the ball hit the net, it was pandemonium, wasn't it? Obviously, fans were on the pitch, and there was lads that played Sunday League football with literally on the pitch at Cardiff. I'm like, what's going on here? It's mental. And by the time they cleared the pitch, it's just, you could just see the emotion of everyone. Everyone was just, you know, I remember sort of being really pleased with like your Jonos and your Benos and Grange and those guys who had been through it. And I was just trying to look for my family, look for my dad, like, and he was mental. Pretty much a bit of a blur until, we lifted the trophy. Yeah.
Still gives me goose pimples now.
He was mad. It was a crazy day.
So what was it like then in the aftermath of that? I imagine, like, say you work in media now. What was it like? Was it just a frenzy? 18-year-old kid scored. It was a £40 million penalty at the time, man. He dropped 200-300.
Darren Carter for the Premiership.
Darren Carter for the Premiership.
Yeah, Drury, we've got him to thank for that. Great wary words even now. But it was crazy. I think my mum and dad then were just inundated with different things. My sister at school the next day, the ITV came in wanting to interview her, and. You know, she's always been quite a shy person. I mean, she's more confident now, but even back then, I remember her doing, she'd done an interview and she said something about my dad crying, and my dad was like, oh, I tell you, I bloody can't say that. My credit got. But that was it. And I remember like Sky Sports wanted to film me walking down the street back to my house. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, I didn't really want too much of it, but it was. They just wanted to, you know.
It's a fairy tale, isn't it?
It was a big moment. Like I say, local lad comes through the ranks, scores a penalty. They wanted to jump on it. So, and then, like I say, the it was quite funny because Colin Tatham, who was at Birmingham Mail at the time, I remember Tatham coming to the house and doing a sort of piece and took a picture of me, my mum and dad. And then he took a picture, like the photographer said to my mum, "Oh, give him a kiss on the cheek." And so took this picture, and my mum's like, no, you're not going to use that. Don't use that one. What did I use? Literally be picture in the mail, with my mum kissing me on the cheek and got scarves on and stuff. It was crazy. Yeah. Looking back, it was mental, yeah.
Back in the Premier League, first time in a generation. Going into that season, is there anything that you remember particularly? Fond, not so fond?
The opening day at Highbury against Arsenal was just surreal a little bit. It's the team they had then, Vieira was Omri, Bergkamp, that he was, especially for me as a midfielder, I came on in that game, I think again around the hour mark, something like that, and just running on and having Big Patrick Vieira stood there, and you got Thierry Henry and Viltord and people like that.
I remember they were all massive, weren't they?
Just huge. That was, I mean, you talk about it now. I mean, the players, you know, are athletes now, you know, even more so. But even back then, you could see top flight. It was just difference, you know, in terms of build and physicality. So, yeah, that was interesting when you first run on. You think, wow, I've got to go up against this guy. And Alou Cissé got sent off that day. So, yeah, down to 10. And we only ended up losing. I think it was 2-0 in the end. And I actually hit the bar with a header. Like, I remember Stan Lazaridis crossing the ball, just ran late and literally got in there, headed it, and hit the top of the bar. And I'm like, man, he scored. I mean, Premier League debut at Highbury. Like, this is crazy. So that was a big moment, just because obviously Premier League and being at Highbury as well against incredibly, you know, talented players. And that year, again, once we got our first point, our first point was at Everton away. I think they equalised in the last minute. Which was, you know, should have been our first win. And then we went to Liverpool later on, where Clinton Morrison got two. We were 2-0 down.
Yeah.
Getting a bit of a battering, and then Clinton came on, and I came on in that game, and Clinton scored in the last minute to equalise. That was incredible. So I think he ran round and ran back round to the fans, the away fans at Anfield, and to get a point at Anfield, it'd be that team as well. Gerrard, Alonso, all them, had them guys. That was a standout. Go to Old Trafford, playing against, you know, your Keynes and Scholes and Beckham and Giggs. It just seemed like every week it was like, you know, watching Match of the Day, you know, every year since I grew up.
Who do you pride yourself on as a box-to-box midfielder? Because you were the Bowyer before Bowyer, I think, weren't you?
Yeah, could call you that, yeah. To be fair, my dad had always said about Bron Robson. Loved Bron Robson growing up. So my dad kind of said he's the ultimate midfield player, box to box, does both sides of the game, leader and everything else. So he was the first player really I sort of prided myself on growing up. And then to be fair, you know, as I got a bit older, you did look at your Vieiras and your Keynes and your Scholeses, you know, even Lampard. I love Lampard because he was that.
Come on, lads.
You know what I mean? Scoring goals from midfield. Gerrard, again, you know, so... It was incredible to go up against them players all that season.
I was going to say, you were literally, when you look back now in the history books of the Premier League, even to now, Blues get promoted now, it's like, okay, who are you matching yourselves up against? You literally were matching yourself against the best midfielders, probably some of the best midfielders we've ever actually produced in England, weren't you?
And again, I say that I was so fortunate that time in the Premier League was just some of your most celebrated players, you know, and especially in my position, central midfield. You know, even people like Bolton had like JJ Okocha and people like that, you know. So it wasn't like it was just United and Chelsea and Arsenals.
Yeah,
it was incredible players all through the Premier League at that time. So, yeah, every week was just another, you know, just another game where you were just, I'm going up against some incredible players who have been watching a Match of the Day for years and years.
Did Bruce have to kind of finesse what you were doing in regards to box to box? Did you have to change it slightly that he's doing the Championship to doing the Premiership?
To be fair, no. Bruce, he kind of just let me go with it. I think he liked my energy and liked the fact that I was box to box. And so he never really kind of said anything to me about sort of changing my game slightly. That was only later on when I worked with Tony Mowbray at West Brom. He was the first manager who actually told me to do less running, which was, you know, absolutely crazy to me. But Brucey, he was just, he just let me go, to be fair. And that can be me.
When you're going out against players like that, is it Are you looking at him thinking, I need to put one on early, let him know I'm there, or...
You weren't that kind of player, was you?
I wasn't, yeah.
Probably say that until we move on to something in the list.
Yeah, I wasn't...
You weren't that type of player yet.
Yes, but I hadn't learned that bit. But no, I was always aggressive. My dad had always sort of instilled in me that, you know, when you tackle, you go in full force, 100% fair. Yeah, or you're risking injuring yourself if you don't. So I was always kind of aggressive in that way, but I don't know, I just had too much of respect for some of the players to go and like land one on Steven Gerrard. Do you know what I mean? And be like that young lad who's just gone and crippled, you know, one of England's most talented players. So it was kind of more of a, you know, yes, I'd be obviously aggressive against them, but I try to outrun them. That was my big thing, was on, you know, my energy and my stamina is one of my biggest strengths. So yeah, I wanted them to worry about me if they possibly could, rather than me sort of, yeah, thinking, well, I've got to go and put one on him here to slow him down, because that wouldn't have worked on a Gerrard or most of them players anyway. So
true.
Never used to it.
So moving on slightly, so what was the situation to leave Blues? I imagine it was super difficult. Was Bruce still?
Yeah, so Bruce was still manager. It came off the back of, I'd gone to Sunderland the year before on loan, and I needed that loan just because we'd been in the Premier League a few seasons. I hadn't played a massive amount of minutes. I needed a loan away. Because I think, you know, Brucey obviously strengthened the squad when we went into the Premier League. I always felt like I was always the young lad in the squad. So going to Sunderland under Mick McCarthy in the Championship for the first half of my last season that ended up being a Blues was incredible, and actually would have stayed there for the season had we not had injuries back here. And Brucey recalled me sort of in the new year. And I had a really strong finish of that season. We had a decent run, and I had a really good run in the team and scored a few goals. And so I went into the summer thinking, could next year be the season where I really fully break into this Blues team and become a regular? But during the summer, Brian Robson came in for me at West Brom. I remember getting the call from Steve, Bruce. I was on holiday with my friends. And I tried my best to make it like I was. Oh, I just had a family holiday. I'm not away with the lads. Gaffer, honestly. Applied the field. It's a quiet corner. I can go, yeah, the manager's ringing me. But he just said to me, he said, listen, it's your decision. Obviously, Brian's a big pal of his and obviously one of my idols. So he's like, if you want to go speak to him. And I remember going there and coming back, going to, it was literally a pub garden near Coventry, of all places. And I went with my agent, Cyril Regis, at the time, God bless him. He took me, so I'm sitting there with Cyril Regis, Brian Robson in a beer garden. Brian's having like a pint. And I'm just, this is crazy. And he's saying, I want you to come to West Brom, blah, blah, blah. And went through everything about me as a player. And that was big, just coming from Brian and someone I've looked up to and one of my heroes. And it was kind of like, you know, he sold that I'd be a senior player. I think that was the big key for me. And I never was going to be that hero Blues.
But you're still internally torn, I imagine.
It was big. And, you know, I think had it been, you know, West Brom, obviously, because I'd stay local as well there, and it wasn't like I had to move. And the rivalry you see in West Brom's never been that fierce as it Blues and West Brom. There's always, it's a derby, of course, but... So, yeah, and then Jeff Horsfield was there, Darren Purse was there, so I knew a few of the players as well in the squad. So, yeah, he just felt like I needed to kind of, to become more of a senior player, I needed to sort of get out of the umbrella of Blues.
Do you find that's probably something, because you've seen kind of like with Job as well, going to Sunderland from here, haven't you?
Yeah.
Is that like a stigma that you have if you break through the team early as a youngster? You never really lose until you go to another club?
I think so. I mean, obviously you've seen players who have come through the ranks and stayed with the club for years and years and years, but I think you always have that, you tag them with, oh, they've come through the ranks, or, you know, they've been produced by the club, which is great. And I do often think if I'd stayed, how things I might have played out differently. But yeah, it was one of them. Sunderland had got up that year as well, so Mick, I think, was very keen on me coming back on loan to Sunderland as well. So I kind of had that. There and had a look at my time at Sunderland. That was an incredible 6 months. So there was a lot going on, but I just felt like, yeah.
What's the name of the commune to Sunderland, or was you staying up there?
Staying up there. So they actually put you in a hotel in the middle of Newcastle, would you believe? Which was, again, very an interesting time. So about four of us alone at the time, we're all in middle of Newcastle, and it's obviously a fishbowl up there. Mm-hmm. Obviously you've seen the cup final and everything, and their fans are just so intense. So that was quite interesting walking around Newcastle at times thinking, am I going to get lynched here? Then something like that. But no, I loved my time up there. So yeah, that was my first time moving away as well, actually. So that was
it's not a bad first time away, is it? Newcastle City Centre.
Literally, like, just wow, what's going on here? And you're 3.5 hours from home. So yeah, that was big. That got me sort of matured me a lot as well, living away from home and having to fend for myself.
Yeah, so you excelled then at West Brom. Do you feel you had points to prove, or do you feel you just went out fresh? Or
that first season was a difficult one, just because I sort of hadn't started the season in the team. Brian had kind of like had me on the bench, hadn't really played much. Then I came in, then I scored against Arsenal. We would beat Arsenal at home.
What a goal.
Goal of the season, what a goal.
Which was an incredible moment as well in my career. And it was like, right, this is it now. And then the season kind of petered, and that was the first time I can honestly say my confidence got hit. But my form wasn't great. I'd kind of lost a bit of confidence, and it just felt like I couldn't get out. It was the first time I'd experienced it in my career. I was like, how do I get out of this funk? And you know, I was getting a bit of criticism, and probably rightly so at the time. And that was a tough first year, really. Although I loved the squad, the players I was with, and to be fair, we ended up going down. I think Blues did the same year as well. But you know, we fought till the end, and it wasn't like we'd gone down with the whimper. But I really loved the environment there and the players, but my form on the pitch. And I remember going into that summer and thinking, right, next year I'm attacking it. Literally, right, I've gone through it. You know, going to be better for it. And that second year at West Brom, I loved. All to the point that we should have got up automatically. We ended up getting to the playoff final and losing to Derby in the final, which was crushing because of the squad we had. And we should have got up that year with the quality we had. So two very interesting years at West Brom. Really interesting. Like, the first one was a real struggle. First time I'd had any kind of criticism when my form had dipped. That second year, I kind of like come through it, and I was like, right, I know what to do now if I do ever have a dipping form.
I've
been there, done it, I've experienced it.
What do you do at that point then? Who do you look to when you go, look, I don't know what to do, I don't know what I'm doing wrong?
It's hard. I think you look to the more experienced players. So, you know, those who have been through it and done it. And a lot of the time, it's just getting your head down and working and you know, going back to the core foundation of what I was, which was this box-to-box midfielder. Literally, I pride myself on being super fit. And if, you know, it's not quite happening with the ball technically, and I'm you know, not having a great time, at least I'm going to work my socks off. I'm going to have an impact. And that's what I kind of tried to do, was just literally get myself as fit as I possibly could and have as one of my biggest strengths.
Because I suppose that outside noise as opposed to inside noise, isn't it?
It is. And yeah, like you said, two very different managers. Brian Robson left sort of the start of this, my second year, and that's when Tony Mowbray came in. He's a very different coach and manager, plays the game in a different way, very much a technician and a thinking man of the game. Like, incredible, Tony. Got so much respect for him. And he was the first guy who said to me, like, that you're doing too much running. I was like, what are you on about? I'm covering like 12 and a half, 13K in some games. Like, this is, you know, some people be literally applauding me. He was like, no, in this system, you don't need to do as much running. You can serve your energy. And that was the first manager or first person that kind of got me thinking differently. Then I don't have to be this all out aggressive runner all the time. I can actually drop in and be a bit more of a sitter, because I could do both. I could go forward. I could be as a 10, or, you know, I could sit back there and get the ball deeper.
But not all at the same time.
But like you say, that was the balance. You work a bit clever at the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Times. And in that team with the time, I had some great players around me, John O'Greening and Rob Corran, like proper technicians of the game. So it was easy. I could literally, and that's why I loved my second season there, especially under Tony, because, yeah, he was great to work for.
Well, we said it down here, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got a spell at Preston then, didn't you?
Went up to Preston again. Ended up having 4 years at Preston. Again, moving away. First time I'd moved away, like, properly. The Sunderland thing had only been 6 months, so got a place up in Lancashire, in Lybham.
And that was, again, a roller coaster ride at Preston. First season, we struggled. I went into a squad that had been competing for the last couple of years. When I arrived, it was kind of like it was a bit splintered, the team and the squad, and injuries, and the recruitment hadn't gone well really in the summer, and we struggled that year, and it became a bit of a survival.
You'll see each other.
Paul Simpson, but he didn't stay for long. I think he was only probably 2 or 3 months. He signed me, and then they got rid of him. And then Alan Irvine came in, and Alan was top draw. Loved working with Alan, super coach, super person. And we ended up staying up that year. The second year, then we actually made a charge, got into the playoffs. And then my third year, I think Alan got replaced not long into that season. And then Darren Ferguson came in. And then that was when things changed. Wanted a much younger squad, kind of them wanting to get rid of kind of what had been the core of that squad for the two seasons before. And
how old was you then?
I would have been 26.
Right.
Yeah, 26, yeah. 26, then 27. And started that fourth year then, that's when I went to Millwall. And for 6 months, would have stayed for the season. But Darren Ferguson got sacked at Preston. So then Phil Brown came in and called me back to Preston. So I had last half of that season at Preston. It was a roller coaster at Preston, in all fairness.
I have sometimes. I think, all right, I'm all right here. And then all of a sudden,
honestly, really cool. Yeah. And that's where I really knew then, and kind of had enough experiences that football, anything can happen. From one day to the next, something can change. Your manager can go, someone else comes in, their own ideas, you're surplus to requirements, or they want a certain thing. Preston taught me a lot. And it was a roller coaster, but a great club. Loved the fans, and proper like hard working, just wanted players who were committed to the club, and
a real heritage up there as well. Football museum.
Deepdale, loved playing Deepdale, the stadium and everything. So real roller coaster. But that's
going awesome back there. To what you said then. If you're doing the running and putting the hard yards in, similar to when we had Tebbley down here, who's folklore legend and all that. Yeah. He wasn't technically brilliant, not comparing you to Tebbley. but he used to put heart and soul, 110%, and as a fan, that's all you ask for, isn't it?
100%. And you try and say that to modern day players now, and the new generation coming into the game. Yes, obviously everyone wants technically gifted players and wants players who can take the ball under pressure and be able to manipulate it and use it well. But the fundamentals of the game don't change. You have to work. You look at the top teams. I always say to younger players that, don't just watch a Liverpool or, a Barcelona or a Real Madrid with the ball. Watch them off the ball. Watch how they work. That PSG, Liverpool Champions League game, given Anfield, you had two top teams, and the out of possession and the work rate was incredible from every single player.
Well, this was like Newcastle the weekend, wasn't it, yesterday? Against Liverpool, they literally suffocated and didn't land.
Well, for us, and literally, that is the foundation of, and you don't get to your ability unless you have that foundation.
So talking of getting on the right side of fans, so you went to Millwall, sent off on your debut.
Crazy. And it was actually Michael Oliver, who's obviously, he was starting out then, he's a fully-fledged international referee now. Two of the worst yellow cards, I've got to say. But people always say, you're making excuses, cards. No, there were two really poor yellow cards. The fact was, the second one, we were 3-0 up. It was the opening day at Bristol City. We were 3-0 up. I think it was about 70 off the minute. And it booked me for Celtic in transition. It wasn't even anything major. So when he's got his second yellow, I'm like, are you sure? The game was done, really. I remember sort of going off, and I think the fact that the game was won anyway, which was, relief to me. But I think the Billwall fans probably thought,
he'll have a bit of influence.
And he's there. Oh. We'll have that. So, that was interesting.
So about your research after that then?
So you had a spell at Cheltenham, didn't you?
So I had an injury, So that last year at Preston, my contract was up. I had a summer kind of where I was unsure what I was doing next. And Phil Brown was manager at Preston and had kind of said to me, come back pre-season, I want to try and sort a deal. I'm sorting things with the chairman.
So I did. I went back for probably the first 4 weeks of pre-season, but at that time, I'd given up my apartment up there and I was staying with one of the other players, Sean Sledger, who's a fellow Brummie, albeit a Villa fan. So I was staying with Sean, but he got to a point where I was like, you know, this isn't, you know, working for me. I need to know what's going on. And in the meantime, I had spoke to Chris Hugan, player of Blues, just to see if I could come in and train, just to stop me having to commute up there. And Chris was like, yeah, come in.
So I remember at the time all the media buzz
around. Yeah, so again, I didn't want that to be a kind of a thing. And Chris was incredible. Chris was great. He said to me, you know, come in and train. We'll see where we go from here. Never promised me anything. And then got to a point, I'd been here for probably 3 or 4 weeks. And he was like, if I can, you know, I'd like to sort something, but I need to maybe get a few players out in the meantime. So I was left in limbo, but you know, he was totally honest with me. The Preston thing, it kind of, Phil was having a real problem up there. So I kind of left that. But in the meantime, I was like, well, where do I go? What do I do? And I said to Chris, well, as much as I want to stay here, if there's an opportunity for me to go and train somewhere. And then Gus Poyet rang at Brighton, and Brighton were obviously champ at the time and sort of starting their rise. I went in there for a week and trained down there.
So Marcus was there as well?
Yes, Marcus was there. Mm. Yeah, Marcus Painter was there. So trained down there for a week, had a great week down there. But it's quite interesting that the conversation I had with you at the end of the week, because I played in a game at Bournemouth to finish it off, and had scored and played. I thought, I've done well here. I feel like there's an opportunity. And I remember the conversation he had with me. He said, yeah, I'm looking for someone who's really big and aggressive. He's just going to head and kick people. And I was like, and I appreciate his honesty. You know, I could understand exactly what he wanted. He said, I've got a lot of technical players here that you are. So I was like, okay, I appreciate you honestly.
Like, you
and they probably would have been a bit naive and being too honest. I was like, yeah, I'm not someone who's just going to go edit kick people. Like, I want to play, do you know what I mean? So,
whereas some players might have been like, yeah, I can do that.
I can be that for you. But probably my honesty was, not good in that situation. But so now I went down to Southampton actually as well with Alan Pardew. They were League One at the time, again starting their kind of rise that ended up going to the Premier League. Again, that was an incredible situation because I was down there for, I think, 3 or 4 days, played in a game, and Alan was great. And then I got a phone call. It was the night before one of the training sessions, and Alan said, yeah, I've had a real fallout with the chairman, had a bit of a argument and stuff, and he's saying, you know, no players now coming in, or trial players, and... Well, you can play for the hotel.
I was going to say, so what are you doing in this situation? Obviously, you're living out of suitcase. You know, I'm not there.
You're
up there.
Down south. Yeah, and Alan said, listen, don't worry, I'm going to pay personally. And I was like, no, there's no chance you're going to pay. I'm going to pay the hotel for you because you'd had a real fallout with the chairman. So then, yes, I came back again and then got an opportunity to go to Nottingham Forest. Chris Cottrell was manager at the time. Forest had a really strong squad, and people like Jono Greening was there, and I knew Jono from West Brom, and invited me to play in the game behind closed doors at the training ground. They were playing Watford, and he said, you know, loads of my first team players are playing to get minutes, so it's not like you're coming in and play with kids. So I went in, I think we were like 3-0 coming into half time, and it was one of them games where literally Cottrell's on the sideline with my agent Phil, and later, they were talking about potential contractor now, and literally about 30 seconds before half time, ball's just gone across. And as I've gone to sub, it's not even a real, you know, dynamic movement. I've gone and I've just felt something go like in my groin. First time I'd had a proper serious injury, and I knew it straight away. I knew something had happened. Like, you just heard a pop. Seen their physios after, obviously I'd signed a waiver to play in the game and everything. I tore my adductor. Yeah, so came back to Blues, and again the physios who are still here, Pete and Pete Shaw and Dave Hunt, literally said to me, "Yeah, it's an op." Went to Chris Hughton, and Chris said he was incredible. He just said, "Come in, do all your rehab here. We'll treat you as a first team player." Blah blah blah. And So I had the op, and then literally, yeah, for the, that season, then was a write-off just because, yeah, I tore my adductor. So I was out of contract with that club, but it was only because of...
What would you have learned if you didn't have this as a...
Well...
You have to pay the operation yourself, I assume.
So the PFA helped me out. Right. So obviously Blues were under no obligation. Mm-hmm. Obviously Forest weren't. So I had to pay first and foremost, but the PFA were very, very good. They reimbursed me a lot of it, but I ended up having an infection in it. And that kind of then escalated for another couple of years. So I had a lot more. I ended up having two other operations off the back of that to clear out kind of the infection and what that had done. So yeah, but the PFA had funded a lot of it, but a lot of it I had to obviously
outlay
myself.
It's always the innocuous ones, isn't it?
Yeah, it was weird. It really was. And I ended up having a clinical negligence case because of that go on, and that's a whole other story. So I did get reimbursed sort of further down the line because of that, because of it was malpractice
material. Okay,
so yeah, that year was again crazy, and that was the first year where I really got to the media, because it was the Europa League year, and obviously that was an incredible year here with the club, wasn't it? And I ended up Tom Ross had asked me to do commentaries for the game, and that was the first time I
really got to 12.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, in 2012. So that was the first time I really got to media and commentary. Love that. And that kept me involved. But I was still an outsider for the first time in my career. I was like, I've been in this football circle and the ball they talk about. And then when you're on the outside and you're kind of like, this is very different. And that was the first time in my head I was like, what will I do if I haven't got football? Media was obviously the first thing. I thought, yes, that's definitely for me. But then I thought about my coaching and stuff then. Do I go and get my badges and stuff? And but to be fair, I got the offer to go to Cheltenham then to kind of rebuild myself after the injury and the infection and stuff.
How difficult was that?
It was difficult. So I still had something ongoing there. Not the actual muscle itself. It was just kind of like surface level where the scar was and where it is. It's such a, you know, it's rubbing and everything else. And so I went to Cheltenham and kind of, but I did ignite my career again and started got me playing games, although I still wasn't sure whether this was, you know, that needed sorting.
Does that play on your mind then when you play? Is that completely?
Not when you play, just before, like, and you're having to fast up and you're thinking, bloody hell, this is just annoying. It's a real hindrance, like, and not fully knowing what it was. And he was only sort of, that year at Cheltenham was great because we made the playoffs and it was, we had a good run and got me back playing. And it was only the end of that year before I went to Northampton that I finally kind of found out, like, there was, like a surgical, it was like a little pin, little metal thing that had been left in. It actually worked its way to the surface. Like, obviously, your body rejects, but it took nearly a year for it to actually make its way to the surface, which I didn't know was in there. So that meant I had to have another operation and just to clear out all the stuff that has and come with that. It's not what you want to hear, I suppose. But it was a crazy period because, like, I was now at Northampton and Cheltenham, which was League Two, and I was still at aspirations. I was only 28, still 29, of pushing back up. That's where the game as well, I think, the shows its ruthless side, that when you're out of it for a year and then all of a sudden you come back and people are like, I remember my agent saying to me, people think you're like 31, 32, because I played so young, then made my debut. They don't realise you're still only 29, or 20 or 29.
This is the same kind of conversation around Raheem Sterling now on certain phone-ins as I was 40 years old.
Yeah,
that's it. Started so early.
That's it. Just because he played a lot of games, but people think, is he 31, 32 now? I'm like, no.
So it's the thing, that conversation people are making their own mind up. How old he is.
Kind of like you say, forget forgotten about, but you're kind of like, is he? He's off the back of an injury now, and he's the other side of 30, and all that sort of stuff. That was interesting to go through. Interesting time.
You say joining Northampton. Where you got sent off on your debut there as well?
Yeah, I made a habit of it, didn't I?
So I like it. Get a taste for it, Millwall.
Do you know why? That was worse because it was, again, really two bad yellow cards. And, I look back and think, they're just really innocuous ones. Not ones that you'd go, he deserved to be sent off. But it's opening day of the season. We're all at York. It was 0-0. And it was about, again, 20 minutes to go in the game, or maybe about 15 minutes to go in the game. And you're in the dressing room, you're thinking, oh, that's just all up for a point. That, yeah, we'll take it. And then 90th minute, you hear the roar. Oh, no. They scored. And then the lads are coming in dejected. You're like, I've let them down. Do you know what I mean? We've lost 1-0 in the 90th minute. I've been sent off. But Eddie Bruford was manager at the time. And to be fair, he was great. I think he was more aggrieved as well with the decisions. I think they were dough poor to Paul Yellis. Just like the Millwall one.
Yeah. I'd bowled 7 driving tests and it was always interesting.
But yeah, so yeah, it was crazy to think I got sent off on my debut twice. But yeah, it happened.
So returning locally then, just moving forward slightly, going to the Moors.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously it's a massive signing for them.
Yeah.
And obviously that's where, is that where you started doing your badges there, or was that before?
Yeah, so Solihull was the first. It started a little bit of Forest Green.
Forest Green? Yours?
Yeah, so I had 2 years of Forest Green and 2 playoff runs. One, we lost the first year, the second we went up.
Is that goal that you've done about 100 passes?
Yes, the Tester away. That was quite interesting as well. Funny was, we played Chester that year probably about 4 times, because we played them in the league, we played them in the trophy, we played them in another competition as well. I can't remember it was. And John McCarthy, obviously ex-Blues, was manager at the time. And the way we were playing that second year under Mark Cooper and Scott Lindsay, we were literally like that pass rotations. We had people like Ethan Pinnock in the team and Christian Doyce, Kiefer Moore. Yeah, we had a good team. I remember John coming to me. We played before that game, actually. And he said, Cots, I've watched you guys now 4 or 5 times. He said, I still don't know how you do what you do. I was like, this is a manager before the game saying, like, how do we stop you? And I'm like, John, it's a dream to play as a midfielder. And we played a diamond in midfield and everything else. So that actually ended up being I loved my 2 years at Forest Green. But after that, he was kind of like, yes, Moores came in. Moores wanted me to go there a year before, but they just got into the National League. And I felt like I loved it at Forest Green, so I'd signed another year. So
it's a year on year.
So literally done a year and then a year after that. Moores came and I just felt it was the right time to sort of come back.
Come home.
And and focus on the badges as well, and help the club. Again, 4 years of a roller coaster. That first year was the big survival where we managed to stay up against the odds. I think we were like 12 points adrift at Christmas, and we went on this run under Mark Yates and Tim Flowers. And then the club, it was great to be there to see the progression of the club. And obviously Darryl Eales come in and took over and invested loads of money into the club and into the, to the town and everything. So that was nice to be part of. It was nice being home. And then, as I say, doing my badges alongside that and really focusing on the coaching. I was involved with the F&E program and all the sort of the pathway that they'd created at Solihull. They put me in my second season, they put me in charge of that, which was, again, a big eye-opener, not only playing, but then having to take care of the whole program sort of from sort of, sped at an under-21s all the way down. So that was my first real venture into coaching and kind of the pathway and, management. I had to manage kind of staff and everything. So
how did you find that, the play at the same time?
It was intense. And that second season was where we finished second. We should have won the league, really. We missed a couple of opportunities late on in the season to actually go top. And it was Orient who picked us in the end, and we ended up losing in the Plasterfield. So that season was one of the most enjoyable seasons I played in every game. Never missed a game, captained the team. And it was kind of like, it was incredible, and loved it, really. And I'm doing all that on the side as well. So my work ethic and the kind of having a real sort of work-life balance, that was the first time I was like, wow, this is...
So not only finishing training, now you're having to go back to your disabled job.
100%, yeah. And I remember some of my partner, Sal, saying to me, this is the real world now. This is, this is what it'll be like after football and stuff, even if you're going to coaching and stuff, and the hours will be longer and stuff. And So yeah, that was good to experience. Because it gave me a sense of, you know, if I'm going to coach or manage, yeah, it's not just like turn up as a player, do your session, get showered and go. It's there's a lot more that goes around. I think you're having to deal with people and, you know, what are your people skills like, what are your management skills like, your leadership skills. So that was, yeah, that was an eye-opener.
So you transitioned to, how did the transition to West Brom women coaching come?
So I was finishing my A-licence. So I'd left Moors and my plan was to have a bit of a break and kind of be like, you know, take stock of my career. I, you know, sort of said to myself, right, I'm going to hang the boots up because I wanted to fully sort of push myself into the coaching full-time, because that last year at Moors under Jimmy Shan and Rich Beale, they had me as a first-team coach slash player. And obviously we were at the back end of COVID then as well. So with COVID and injuries, I ended up actually playing probably 20-odd games that year. And
because you were there.
And as much as it was, again, new experience being a player coach and being in the game plan meetings and being in all the meetings with Jimmy and Rich Beale and Kevin Poole and James Quinn there, like talking about tactics, talking about players, you know, and not that I felt like, oh, I'm kind of going into the dressing room, the players ever thought, oh, you know,
it is a bit of a strange situation.
You know what I mean? I've been there and they knew me, do you know what I mean? They knew that's not my character. I was never going to go in a bad mood with them to the manager. It would always be, I'll be honest about it, kind of right tactically in these players and everything else. So yeah, but being then playing, and you play this sort of in the middle of a back three. So I've gone back into sort of a defensive role, which was new and I really enjoyed. But the managing, the playing and the coaching, I think like I was always right. If I'm a player, I'm fully in as a player. Like I'm doing all the prep and I'm doing all the stuff that my body needs, especially as I was getting older. And I didn't feel like I could dedicate myself fully to either.
Yeah.
And I was kind of
ready yourself.
Did
you find that on the pitch then? Is it interfere with just wanting to play and being able to play?
A little bit, but it was a little bit more eye-opening because I'd been in all the meetings and tactically, you know, I'd got such a feel for the game then and know exactly what Jimmy wanted and you know, how he wanted it to play out and how he was coaching it then. And even when I was on the pitch, and especially moving back into a defensive role, I could see the whole pitch and I could sort of, you know, dictate a little bit. Apart from that, it was hard, like I say, to balance the two. And at the end of that season, it was either right, I either go somewhere and play, and I still feel I could have played 2 or 3 years.
How old was it?
So I was 37, 38. 38.
Still in good shape. Feeling good.
Felt great. And that genuinely was a part of me that was like, I want to go to on 40, you know, and I feel like I could have done, especially at that level. But I love the coaching and I thought that's my way to really then start to work my way back to the levels I wanted to get to and work with, you know, top players. So yeah, left Moors and it was kind of finished my A license. So going in at West Brom with the women's team was great. That allowed me to do that.
And it helped at West Brom that you've been there and you know people to speak.
Yeah, it was through someone at the club I knew and Jenny Sugarman, who's a good friend of mine now, she was manager. And thing was, Jen knew nothing about me. She's a manager and she's been sort of asked like, can Darren come in? And so I think she was a little bit like wary of, but you know, hit it off with Jeremy straight away. She's, you know, great person. And she, yeah, allowed me to sort of like help her and, yeah, get my license done at the same time. And so it worked well. And then it was only 3 months literally before I got the call from Blues to come into take the opportunity here at with the women's team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how did that work? So you just started and someone just abroad with Arger. You've probably got a good reputation doing what you're doing.
It was through Craig Gardner. So obviously I knew Craig and Craig had sort of rang me and said, you know, do you fancy it? And I've got to be honest, I said no to start with. I didn't feel like it was the right time. And being totally honest, I knew what he was like, yeah. And I'd seen obviously what had been happening with the women's team, how, you know, under-resourced they were and kind of they were bottom of the league, I think, you know, 1 point and they'd scored one goal and... So this is it just seems like a real poison chalice.
But yeah, we spoke to Tim previously.
Yeah.
And Tim was saying exactly the same thing. It was so frustrating at the time, wasn't it?
It was it was heartbreaking really to see the how it had gone. And it was only when I came in eventually and actually spoke to some of the players who had been here for the last sort of 3 or 4 years and just seen how bad it was. And it was dire. You know, they completely kind of took everything out of it.
How was the previous that ownership at the time?
Previous ownership, and you know, it was going to a point where they were just going to disband it.
Fold.
Literally, it would have gone that way. And it was heartbreaking because the history of this the women's team here is that's fantastic.
What, yeah, and when we spoke to Tim, saying that the accolades and the cup wins, everything that that achieved, the players that were here.
They've had, like I say, had some top players here. I'm good friends with Kaz Carney, and Kaz is obviously a big blue nose. She came through here and when they had literally nothing, he was, you know, semi-professional. She's seen and still is big force in the women's game of pushing things to be professional and everything. And but, you know, speaking to her and some of the experience she had, to see the way the team was going, it was heartbreaking.
As a professional football club as well, isn't it? That's yeah.
And thing. I genuinely was torn because I thought, you know, if you're asking me to be a head coach for the first time, and I never thought I'd be a head coach this early or this young, coming into that situation, a lot of people would have gone, hell no, you know, what's this going to do for me and my reputation and everything? But because it was Blues, because then I got to know kind of what was going on here, you feel compelled to, I've got to try and help here. If I can.
Is that what it was?
And it was more a case of, well, the team was in such a bad position. It was, I think everybody expected them to go down anyway. So it was kind of like, you're coming in, no expectations. So that was another thing. Well, yeah, who else is going to come in and help this club? So that was kind of my drive and my motivation. And it ended up being 2.5 years again, pure roller coaster. Obviously, dealing with the old ownership. The turnaround is incredible. And you know,
did it seem like it was never going to come because there were false dawns, weren't there?
There was, and I think, you know, when I first came in, yeah, it was bad, and just what we had at our disposal, and you had the men's team, you had the 21s, you had the 18s, and us at Wastills, and Wastills just wasn't big enough. And so you had the same battles, but everybody trying then to get on certain pitches and get certain facilities, and you're off the back of COVID, so there's still bits and pieces that the training ground people can't go and all that. And obviously being a women's team at a training ground full of men, it has its you know, drawbacks as well. So, yeah, there was a lot going on. But to see the transition has been, you know, incredible. Obviously, what Tom Wagner and Knighthead had done for the club as a whole is incredible.
It's still unbelievable, isn't it, now?
But it is. And there was so much to fix. And having, you know, been behind the scenes and seeing, you know, again, how the men's academy, boys' academy, how under-resourced they were and the problems they were having, you know, seeing firstly Boya, he was manager when I first came in, then it was John Eustace, seeing the battles they had, and it's crazy to see how it's just completely flipped 360.
It's still unbelievable, all that stuff, isn't it? To think back with all them.
I think if you're a blue nose, and even me, like you say at that time, when I knew kind of the takeover was getting done, I still wouldn't have seen the club in this position as quickly as it has been. But I think the turnaround has been incredible. And that's, like you say, credit to...
Did you get to chat to Tony when he came back, Mowbray?
Seen him, yeah, briefly. Yeah. One of their training sessions, Wastills, because they'd moved to Henley by then. But they came back and they trained on the undersorted, the heated pitch at Wastills one of the days and got to chat to him. So that was good to sort of catch up with him and see him. And obviously, at the time, there was a bit of optimism, wasn't there? Tony coming in and you thinking, right. And I had no doubt the team would be fine. But obviously, unfortunately, yeah, with Tony and his health, I think was a big contributing factor to the team.
It was that going down season when it was just
comedy of errors, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And you kind of felt like it caught up with the club.
Yeah.
And that's why even with my first season with the women's team, when we ended up going down, I remember saying to the players the day after the game we went down, I was emotional because I was like, fuck. So they fought their absolute hearts out and they give it a root. We fought pretty much till the end. We give themselves a chance from nowhere. And I was like, it's not, you don't deserve this. Like the club's got relegated, not you as players, just because of everything that have gone on. It's caught up with the club. And that's how you kind of felt with the men's team a little bit, didn't it?
That's not what I did. The performances, he was literally every season, weren't it, on the precipice.
I remember being at Bristol City that year when they stayed up on the last day and not again. Oh, we can't go for this again. And then...
It's not good for your ticker, is it?
Oh, God, no. So,
what are your thoughts on the upcoming final?
I'm excited. Yeah, I just don't want anyone to underestimate the game.
Who has a commentary team?
Yes, going with BBC WM. So I'll be with them on the day. So I think we'll do some stuff on Wembley Way maybe before the game.
See, that's another mental part of your life that you're like, now you've gone from watching there to playing to now, like, it's like.
Yeah, it's great. It's been incredible to watch and commentate on, just purely from a fan. Obviously, I'm getting to watch the team, but also just seeing what Chris does tactically, and then listening to him after post match, and kind of what I've seen from the game, was he seeing the same, or the tweaks he does within the team, and I've been fascinated because he's been great, as much as the outsiders from Birmingham City will go, you spent this, you should be winning these games.
You've got to be able to put it in front of you. Phenomenal. Jealousy is a phenomenal thing, isn't it?
Because it's mad, it's mad.
To not give props and credit to
you've got to create
what and the courage and belief.
Yeah.
Like what we were to what we are now, even style apply, everything about
short amount of time.
And the thing is, people disregard League One as a level in terms of, do you know what I mean? You've got some very, very good players and managers, coaches at this level. And yes, the Championship and the Premier League are a level on, but League One level is not to be messed with, and how Chris has approached it, and to show the consistency, especially when they're playing game after game.
And you're everyone's cup final.
Exactly. Everybody gets themselves up to...
You're a scalp.
To play Birmingham City. So it's different, isn't it? Everybody's different in their journey and where they are with their clubs and stuff. And just because, like you say, we've had investment now for the first time in many, many years. And this year, again, I think people who obviously don't support the club will forget. We've had zero to cheer about for a long, long time as Blues fans. And... let us enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Let us enjoy our moment, of potentially winning a league and potentially winning a cup final. So
you've got to chuckle, because as much as we're on the trajectory, we are still in League One, and most weeks you're out there and you've got the away fans singing, "Where were you when you were shy?" Like an Orient fans, we are literally playing you in League One. We're not there yet. We're on the way.
And that's it. I just hope people don't get ahead of themselves, like you say. I don't want it to be... if we do go up this year and win the league, and
we've got no right to then smash the championship.
It's completely different. I'm sure the recruitment will be, spot on in the summer, and we'll recruit players then to go again. But you can't be like, right, we're expected to be pushing next year to be going into the Premier League. It doesn't work like that. But it's that expectancy and expectation. You have to
start creeping a little bit lately, hasn't it?
You do feel it a little bit, just because we're winning so many games. It happens at every club. You win games, you're expected then to continue to win. Even the weekend at Northampton, just because they're sitting, fifth, sixth from bottom, you've got no defined right to go there and win. It's
not the way they're set up as well. The team.
It's difficult. And off the back of this run that the team's had over the last 8 weeks, from the start of January, it's been Saturday, Tuesday.
Relentless.
And again, that gets overlooked by people, what these players are actually
watching them.
This break will be brilliant for them then. I think this will do them the world of good. There'll be a few obviously going on international, but I think just the mental break of being at the club and having to play game after game, I think it'd be a great refreshing, ready for the final push.
Yeah. So what's the future hold for you? Your aspirations, England manager?
I don't know, that's a bit too much pressure here.
Poison chalice.
I love coaching. I love coaching. I love the media side. I love the commentary and being part of that side of it. I do miss the day-to-day. I love being sort of in somewhere where I can contribute on a daily basis, work with players, work on strategies and game plans and tactically. I love all that side of the game. And like you said, that's why I probably retired maybe a year or two early, was to pursue this. And but yeah, it's again, it's a business where, you know, an opportunity may spring up in a couple of days or a week, or it might take 6 months, a year. So yeah, I've been waiting for something in terms of coaching to come about, and something that I know that I can sort of go in and
get your teeth,
but yeah, and contribute is a big thing. So I've got so much I feel to give back to the game. It's just a case of, yeah, giving an opportunity. So yeah, hopefully watch this space.
Quality. Yeah, I'd love to see you.
Thank you.
Best luck. Thanks so much for your attention.
I appreciate you. Thank you. Pretty sure. Be on it.
Wicked.
Cheers, Aaron.
Thank you.